Man fick hoppa tubus tja, tubus en du var väl tja, på titeln om vad blir ni då, vad som är det. Rupa Maharaj, after seeing the Lord, began to offer his prayers. The prayers of Rupa Maharaj go up to text 17, I believe. Yesterday we read 5, 6, and 7. In those prayers, Dhruva Maharaj, in 5, rather than 6, describe the all-powerfulness of the Lord, because naturally when we want to take shelter of someone, we want that person to be all-powerful, because if we take shelter of someone who's not all-powerful, we might get ourselves in some situation where he won't be able to help us. It will be out of his power and control. And Dhruva Maharaj explained that that all-powerful Lord had entered within him by his benediction. When the Lord touched Dhruva Maharaj upon the forehead with his kansha, Dhruva Maharaj was changed. He was completely awoken spiritually, and although he was the same person, he did not see the same way. Just like as when we sleep, we're the same people, and we may be we're the same people we are when we're awake, and we may be in our dream seeing reality, what we conceive of as reality, but then when we're awake we see completely different. And we have a completely different sense of self. We have a completely different sense of being awake, of seeing, of touching, of tasting. But we don't notice that when we're sleeping. So similarly, we are sleeping now, conditioned, covered by the potency of Maya. So Dhruva Maharaj felt completely awake, and therefore he offered, by the mercy of the Lord, he felt completely awake, and he offered his obeisances to the Lord. Then he explained that the Lord entered the entirety of the material creation, and it is he who is within that material creation. Although the material creation is in so many different forms and manifestations and varieties, that one Lord is everywhere within it. And similarly, that one Lord is he who is sustaining the spiritual world as well. So as the commonality between the material and the spiritual is that they are both the energies and sustained by the Lord, then a devotee, seeing that common part, he can, practically speaking, convert the material into spiritual. Not in the sense that the material becomes eternal, like the spiritual is eternal, but that material energy, when used in Krishna's service, knowing it to be Krishna's, no longer has the ability to delude us and place us in illusion. But that takes deep, deep spiritual vision. That spiritual vision is vision minus the mood that this world is meant for our pleasure, that we are the enjoyer. When that false ego is removed from the consciousness, when we, instead of thinking ourselves as the enjoyer of this world, of anything within the world, but we think ourselves as Krishna's servant, then practically speaking, we are not in the material world, we're in the spiritual world. So Dhruva Maharaj was seeing this commonality. He was acknowledging that the Lord was the Lord of both the spiritual and the material worlds. He was that Lord, that powerful, wonderful Lord. Then in text 8, the last verse we read, Dhruva Maharaj was explaining, he's starting to get to the point of his own foolishness, because he had gone to the Lord asking him for a material benediction. And the Lord is capable of, he gave knowledge to Brahma how to create the universe, and he is the giver of liberation, the friend of those who are distressed, the giver of perfect knowledge. One who has knowledge of Krishna understands that he is like a desire tree. A desire tree is a tree under which we may sit, and whatever we want, it will reciprocate with us and give us, benedict us with that thing. So considering that the Lord can give whatever we want, Dhruva Maharaj is saying, in other words, considering that one has, of the Lord's position, one who has knowledge of the Lord, what will he actually ask for? Will he ask for something insignificant and temporary? Like even a great, great, great kingdom that is temporary? Or will he ask for something still greater, since the Lord is the personification of benedictoriness? So now he's beginning to, he will explain his mind a little more directly. Text 9. Persons who worship you for the sense gratification of this bag of skin. Now, when we think of our wonderful material bodies, we don't usually think of it as a bag of skin. Because if you think of it as a bag of skin, when you think of a bag, what do you think of? That it's a covering to carry something. So what does the bag of skin carry? Just a bunch of bones and fat and flesh and muscles and blood vessels and this and that. So it's not very appealing and attractive by any means. So Dhruva Maharaj is saying that if one worships the Lord for the sense gratification of this bag of skin, is influenced, such a person is certainly influenced by your illusory energy. In other words, he doesn't see. He's identifying the body, this bag of skin and bones, etc., as himself. And therefore, he doesn't know who he really is. And therefore, it's clear, Dhruva Maharaj says, that he's in Maya, he's an illusion. Because he's an eternal soul. It's like we're driving in a car. We have some people have very fancy new cars, and some people have old beaten up jalopies with, you know, exhaust fumes coming out everywhere, and the muffler hanging by ropes and tape and stuff like that. So And then, if you have that kind of a car, you see all the people with those really shiny cars, and you think, boy, only if I could have that. And then finally, somehow or another, you find someone who'll say, whatever you want, I will give you. And you ask either for a new car, or to fix up the old car, not realizing that actually you are the driver, and you are far different from the car, and your existence is separate, and it is meant for so much more than the car. You can live forever. You can be blissful forever, eternally. Instead, we ask for something on the level of the car. That's called illusion. In spite of having you, Dhruva says, who is like a desire tree and are the cause of liberation from birth and death, and at this point Dhruva Maharaj is saying, you are the one who can award liberation, freedom from birth and death, beyond the material world, eternal life, and I am asking for something within the material world. So how foolish am I to keep my desires on that level of within the temporary, within the fleeting, flickering material life, and within the realm of birth and death. That is foolishness when I'm before someone who can award something so far, far greater. So he's speaking about liberation or freedom from material bondage. So foolish persons such as me desire benedictions from you for sense gratification, which is available even for those who live in hellish conditions. So it all, this is something that's so hard to for it to deeply enter our consciousness, that that nayam deha deho deha bhajam niloke kastan kaman arhati vidbhujanye. That means, Rishabhdev Maharaj says, that this human life is not meant to get pleasure that is available in any species of life. A dog sleeps, eats, finds a male, another male or female dog to enjoy with, defends. Cats, bugs, spiders, birds, lions. Did I forget any? I must have forgotten some. Snakes. Oh yes, snakes. Porcupines. Do they have porcupines in Australia? No, in Australia. No. No. Anyway. Wombats.
Hedgehogs.
Yes, that's just what I was thinking of. Actually, like to speak of lizards. So sense enjoyment is available in every one of those species of life. And that is what we are desiring? It's certainly not the most distinguishing feature of the capacity of a human being. But to speak of a spirit soul, to desire the same pleasures that are available for animals. So Dhruva Maharaj is saying, this is foolish. This foolishness means influenced by Maya, the illusory energy. So even someone in a hellish condition means one who is in a position of suffering. Still those persons, regardless of their body, those individuals get sense enjoyment, and yet we are misusing our human life and desiring that petty, trivial, sense, momentary, fleeting sense enjoyment? How foolish. How foolish Dhruva says. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Dhruva Maharaj repented. Why? Because he had come to the Lord to render devotional service for material profit. He here condemns his attitude. Only due to gross lack of knowledge does one worship the Lord for material profit or for sense gratification. The Lord is like a desire tree. Anyone can have whatever he desires from the Lord. But people in general do not know what kind of benediction they should ask for him, from him. Happiness derived from the touch of skin, or sensuous happiness, is present in the life of hogs and dogs. Such happiness is very insignificant. If a devotee worships the Lord for such insignificant happiness, he must be considered devoid of all knowledge. So very, very strong. And because Dhruva Maharaj is condemning himself, we can hear it. But actually, by Dhruva Maharaj's condemnation of himself, he is condemning us. Why? Because our consciousness tends to go in that direction. From our youth, childhood, we are brought up on a steady diet of sense enjoyment, thinking that that is the purpose of life. And for that we need money, for that we need some vocation, a job. So therefore we need jobs, this, that, so we can have sense enjoyment. But Rishabh Devaraj says, Tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam sudyedyasmad brahmasokyam tanantam. Human life is meant to perform austerities, to give up the temporary to gain the eternal. Even if it is difficult on the temporary level, if we perform austerities on the temporary level, if it will bring us to the platform of the eternal, where we can get Brahma Sokyam Tvanantam, the greatest spiritual happiness which is unending, is it worth it? Because after all, even a materialist, to get one type of enjoyment, he will sacrifice a lesser, what he considers a lesser type of enjoyment. Everyone likes to just rest and take it easy, but to gain the pleasures that money can buy, people will work so hard. They will give up the lesser enjoyment for the greater enjoyment. So therefore, Rishabhdev Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj is also saying it here, that we should be clear and have our full intelligence focused on what we can actually gain. What is the limit that we can actually gain through our human life? What can actually be gained? Okay, so here Dhruva Maharaj is condemned just going for sense gratification as the purpose of our existence, which is available even for those in a hellish condition. So therefore, then actually one wants to know, well, what is to be aspired for? What should we want if it's not just enjoyment? And therefore in text 10, my Lord, he answers that question, my Lord, the transcendental bliss derived from meditating upon your lotus feet or hearing about your glories from pure devotees is so unlimited that it is far beyond the range of Brahmananda. Ananda means bliss, and Brahma means the greatest bliss of even merging, becoming one with God, getting free from the material world. So devotional service, meditating upon your lotus feet, in other words, being engaged in Krishna's service, actually being awake to that sweetness, or hearing about your glories from pure devotees, because by hearing about Krishna's glories from pure devotees, one actually tastes the sweetness of the association of Krishna. One actually enters into Krishna's association by hearing about Krishna from exalted devotees. One gets a taste of the sweetness of Krishna. So it is so unlimited, association with Krishna in these two ways, meditating upon your lotus feet or hearing your glories from pure devotees, that it is far beyond the stage of Brahmananda, wherein one thinks himself merged in the impersonal Brahman as one with the Supreme. Since Brahmananda is also defeated by the transcendental bliss derived from devotional service, then what to speak of the temporary blissfulness of elevating oneself to the heavenly planets, which is ended by the separating sword of time. Ended by the separating, isn't it? That's nice writing. Yeah. So three things are considered here. First thing is what? The bliss of sense gratification. Foolish people want that. It is available cheaply in any species of life, even hellish species of life. Crossed off the list of what is worthy of being desired. At least theoretically, we may have taste for these things. But at least theoretically, we should know that that taste is not at all the highest. then we need to cultivate still higher aspirations. Even though we may want those things, but we should know that those things are basically useless, temporary. They bring misery. Okay, then we don't want that. What do we want? What are we supposed to be aspiring for? Hearing from exalted devotees, meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord, and experiencing Krishna's sweetness in that. And that sweetness is far beyond even the happiness of Brahmananda, becoming one with the Lord. So Yuja Mukti, cross that one off, which is 1,000 times better than the temporary blissfulness of elevating oneself to the heavenly planets. Better sense enjoyment. So if we see that the sense gratification that I want is available in the hellish planets, then maybe I think that I should get a more higher standard of sense enjoyment, to have a higher material aspirations. But that heavenly sense enjoyment is ended by the separating sword of time. When a sword cuts, it severs. It severs one thing from another. So we may be attached to some sense enjoyment, but when the sword of time chops and cuts us from it, then regardless of how much we are attached, we've lost it. And that in and of itself is painful. For to lose that which we're attached to, especially if it's the source of our pleasure, is very disturbing and is the cause of great lamentation and suffering. Although one may be elevated to the heavenly planets, he falls down in due course of time. So in other words, devotional service or being with Krishna through service is better than either merging with the Lord, better than sense gratification, better than even heavenly sense gratification. Text 11. Dhruva Maharaj continued. So now we are hearing about how wonderful devotional service is. So now how can I become a devotee and engage in that type of devotional service? So now Dhruva Maharaj is going to reveal the source of devotional service. O unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with great devotees who are engaged in your transcendental loving service constantly, as the waves of a river constantly flow. Such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life. They are pure, free from anything of the material world. Such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life. By the process of devotional service, I shall surely be able to cross the nescient ocean of material existence, which is filled with the waves of blazing, fire-like dangers. It will be very easy for me, for I am becoming mad to hear about your transcendental qualities and pastimes, which are eternally existing. By the process of devotional service, I shall surely be able to cross the nescient ocean of material existence. Nescient means ignorance. Material existence is ignorance that makes us think that we are bodies. That is ignorance, and covers our true identity as eternal souls, parts of Krishna. And this ocean of ignorance is very difficult to cross over, and it is filled with waves of blazing fire-like dangers. Just imagine being in the middle of an ocean, caught in it, and the ocean is has waves of blazing fire-like dangers. But Dhruva says, I will be able to cross over this if you give me the association of your exalted devotees. Why? Because I'm being mad to hear about your transcendental qualities and pastimes. That will be the boat that will take me out of this ocean, across it. The boat will be hearing about you, about your glories, and therefore I ask you to bless me with good association of devotees, because from them I will hear about you in a realized fashion and I will experience you through hearing. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The significant point in Dhruva Maharaja's statement is that he wanted the association of pure devotees. Transcendental devotional service cannot be complete and cannot be relishable without the association of devotees. We have therefore established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyone who is trying to be aloof from this Krishna Consciousness Society and yet engaged in Krishna Consciousness is living in a great hallucination, for this is not possible. From this statement by Dhruva Maharaj, it is clear that unless one is associated with devotees, his devotional service does not mature. It does not become distinct from material activities. The Lord says, Satam prasangam amavirya sambhido bhavanti vidkana rasayanaha kata. Kata o bhava?
Kata.
Only in the association of pure devotees can the words of Lord Krishna be fully potent and relishable to the heart and ear. Dhruva Maharaj explicitly wanted the association of devotees. That association in devotional activities is just like the waves of an incessant flowing river. In our Krishna conscious society, we have full engagement 24 hours a day. Every moment of our time is always busily engaged in the service of the Lord. That is called the incessant flow of devotional service. So that's a big responsibility for the devotees of Prabhupada society. A Mayavadi philosopher may question us. You may be very happy in the association of devotees, but what is your plan for crossing the ocean of material existence? Dhruva Maharaja's answer is that it is not very difficult. He clearly says that this ocean can be crossed very easily if one simply becomes mad to hear the glories of the Lord. Bhavad Gunakata. For anyone who persistently engages in hearing the topics of the Lord from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and who is actually addicted to this process, just as one becomes addicted to intoxicants, it is very easy to cross the nescience of material existence. The ocean of material existence. The ocean of material nescience is compared to a blazing fire. But to a devotee, this blazing fire is insignificant because he's completely absorbed in devotional service. Very interesting. It is not that the blazing fire isn't there, but due to the absorption in Krishna, the material existence becomes insignificant. And that is actually the secret. We tend to want to change the externals of the material world and think that is Krishna consciousness. And when the externals of the material world do not line up the way that we hope they will be to eradicate our difficulties, we become disappointed with Krishna, with God. But that is not what Dhruva Maharaj is saying here, what Prabhupada is saying in the purport. It's due to the absorption in Krishna consciousness, consciousness of Krishna. Krishna bhakti rasita bhavato mati. Absorption in Krishna, absorption in that person, Krishna, absorbed in his loving devotional service. Then the material world appears very insignificant, whether it's offering pleasure or difficulty. And ultimately, we can be assured that it will offer difficulty. And even the pleasures that it offers will turn to difficulty when they are cut by the blazing sword of time. Although the material world is a blazing fire, to a devotee it appears full of pleasure. Vishram puna sukhayate. Why? Because he's not in the material world and he sees Krishna's actions through everything in the material world. But that type of devotional service is very rare because it is performed by someone who has no material attachments. It is rare in the sense that few really want to pay the price. We will stay in the material world because we want something in it. We create our own bars in this prison house. The purport of this statement, but there's nothing other than our own desire, in a very real sense, that keeps us here. The purport of this statement by Dhruva Maharaj is that devotional service and the association of devotees is the cause of the development of further devotional service. By devotional service only is one elevated to the transcendental planet Goloka Vrindavan. And there also there is only devotional service. For the activities of devotional service, both in this world and in the spiritual world, are one and the same. Devotional service does not change. The example of a mango can be given here. If one gets an unripe mango, it is still a mango. And when it is ripe, it remains the same mango, but it has become more tasteful and relishable. Similarly, there is devotional service performed according to the direction of the spiritual master and the injunctions and regulative principles of Shastra. And there is devotional service in the spiritual world rendered directly in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they are both the same. There is no change. The difference is that one stage is unripe and the other is ripe and more relishable. It is possible to mature in devotional service only in the association of devotees. So more, Dhruva Maharaj is continuing about the importance of devotional of the association of devotees. And he's just experienced this by the association of Narada. His instructions have lifted him out of the material world and brought him directly into the presence of Krishna. So he says to the Lord, O Lord, who has a lotus navel, if a person happens to associate with a devotee whose heart always hankers after your lotus feet, seeking always their fragrance, he is never attached to the material body or in a bodily relationship to offspring, friends, home, wealth, and wife, which are very, very dear to materialistic persons. Indeed, he does not care for them. So along with attachment to Krishna, which comes from association with devotees, comes detachment from that which is of the material world. Text 13. Now he's going to describe in 13, 14, and 15, he's going to describe the form of the Lord. My dear Lord, O Supreme Unborn, I know the different varieties of living entities such as animals, trees, birds, reptiles, demigods, and human beings are spread throughout the universe, which is caused by the total material energy. And I know that they are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest, but I have never experienced the supreme form I behold as I see you now. Now all kinds of methods of theorizing have come to an end. So we've seen so many forms, but the form of the Lord is completely different. It is of something else. It is spiritual. We'll read some from Prabhupada's purport. The fact is that unless one engages in the devotional service of the Lord, it is impossible to understand the ultimate form of the Lord. That is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktimam Navijananti. Factual understanding of the Absolute Truth, who is the Supreme Person, cannot be obtained by any process other than devotional service. So this is the way to understand Krishna in fullness, is to be engaged in full devotional service. Now more about, because remember at this point, the Lord is Krishna Garb is standing directly before Dhruva Maharaj. So he's saying how foolish he has been, because the Lord is so powerful, he can give anything. And what was he after? What was he himself asked of? Something childish, he's thinking. A huge kingdom. What do I want? I want to associate with your devotees, because by that association I will have your association, which is so wonderful. And you stand before me, and although you have a form, and I've seen in this life or in so many lives so many different forms, but this, what I'm seeing now, your form now, is completely different. It is transcendental. We use that word transcendental to describe something that is beyond. That's basically what transcendental means. It means beyond. So how can we conceive of something that's beyond anything that we've conceived of? Or we can say it's beyond, practically speaking. Because, or we could use a metaphor, an analogy. It's like this, it's like that. If you take the beauty of the most beautiful thing and times it by a billion, it's something like that. To give us some frame of reference by which we can conceive of something that's beyond anything that we've experienced. So this form, Dhruva is saying, is beyond. It's beyond any material, bodily form that I can experience, or I have experienced, or anyone can experience. Yes, Krishna has arms and legs, and a head and nose, and lotus toes, and ears, but his nose and ears and toes and arms and legs have nothing to do with the nose and toes and ears and arms and legs that we have seen in the material world. They are transcendental, they're beyond. But yet, they exist with form, but something very wonderful. Composed of spiritual existence. Something very different, but yet something that we can conceive of as wonderful. So now he explains that you, this form that I'm seeing, because when we think of God, we think of something so far beyond. But if he's standing before us, we have to know that yes, this is still him. He's not beyond anymore. This is him right here. So he is. So now Dhruva explains in text 14 and 15. He explains that he is Lord Vishnu, the source of the material universes in 14. Lord Gavadakshe Vishnu, and the super soul within every living entity, different from the jiva soul who is in every living entity. So he explains that in 15. And then in the final verse of on 16. In 16 he talks about how the Lord is beyond Brahman. He is Brahman. He's the supreme Brahman. He's the greatest. He's the full spiritual essence of everything. He is that aspect of the Lord that is everywhere and everything, but yet, even though he is everywhere and everything, which is unlimited, the greatest, he is still standing in this wonderful form right in front of Dhruva Maharaj. So he has a form, but that form is unlimited. And that unlimited form is everything, yet it has a form. So this is actually quite inconceivable. The achintya or inconceivable energy of the Lord. An unlimited form. That's text 16 where he explains that. And he just offers up his humble obeisances. And although there are many people, or people talk about God being one, or God being formless, what are typical types of things, that statements that people make when they want to say that the absolute truth is, what do people say?
Huh? He's all knowing.
Yeah, he's all knowing, and he's. Well, yeah, but now we're talking. What do people, you know, the people in the New Agey type of people, what do they say?
One mind.
They're what?
One mind.
One mind.
Universal oneness.
Universal oneness. What else?
Cosmic,
he is cosmic consciousness.
He's all love.
Huh?
He's all love.
He's divine light. He's divine light, yes. Usually the light, he's light. He's light. Like that. So, Prabhupada, right at the end of his purport, and also they say, those who speak do not know. And those who know do not speak. Could you repeat that, please? So Prabhupada explains at the end of his purport. An example is given in this connection by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur of a person proceeding towards a destination. As he approaches, he sees the destination from a distant place, just as we see a city from a distance. So if you approach a city at night from the distance, what's the first thing you see? The light. It appears formless, an energy emanating, something like that. At that time, he simply understands that the city is situated at a distance. When, however, he comes still nearer, he sees the domes and flags. But as soon as he enters the city, he sees various paths, gardens, lakes, and marketplaces with shops and persons buying. He sees varieties of cinema houses, and he sees dancing and jubilation. When a person actually enters the city and personally sees the activities of the city, he becomes satisfied. So there is a degree of detail that it requires before we actually become satisfied. So to know that God is everything, that he's light, that he's energy, that he's consciousness, that he's everywhere. This is an approach to God, and it's certainly true. But it is not satisfying. What it should do is inspire us to come closer and to understand the exact and true nature of that person. So someone, if I'm in the distance and I'm with a friend and we see the lights of the city, miles and miles away. And I decide to wait. And my friend says, I'm going immediately. And he goes closer and closer, and I see him, he appears to get smaller and smaller, and suddenly he enters the city, and I'm thinking, oh, he's become one with the city. And he's gone. He's just become the city, basically. He's merged into the city. But actually, that's not at all what happens. He's entered the city, but that doesn't mean that he's lost his individuality by any means. He's doing things in the city. So similarly, from a distance, that's what it appears like. But actually, something else is happening when we go to Krishna. We enter into the spiritual realm, but yet we keep our individuality and we keep our relationship with Krishna. We do things. And then, when one enters the city and personally sees the activities of the city and partakes in the activities of the city, he becomes satisfied. And the final verse in Dhruva's prayers, we'll read that. This is Dhruva's conclusion. My Lord, so he's explained, the last thing he's explaining again, how great the Lord is. This Lord who has form is right before him. So wonderful. O Supreme Lord, you are the supreme personified. Worshipping your lotus feet is better than becoming king and lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. What is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet? Right, but what is the benediction? That worship, that service itself is the benediction. So different the way than how we think generally, because in this world we do something to get something. We don't do anything in and of itself generally. Everything is fruitive. We may like what we're doing, but it's always to get something. And when the getting, that fruit, that result, that reward isn't there, then we don't want to do the activity anymore. But in devotional service, the goal is doing the devotional service. Even though, as Prabhupada explained in a previous purport, that there are different stages of that devotional service. He compared it to a mango. A mango that's unripe and a mango that's ripe, they are both mangoes, but the mango that's ripe is sweeter still. So similarly, devotional service that is unripe and devotional service that is ripe, they are both devotional service, although devotional service that is mature is sweeter still. So, devotional service is the result of devotional service. Loving devotional service is the result of devotional service. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. To ignorant devotees like me, you are the causelessly merciful maintainer, just like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from attack. So Dhruva Maharaj, we'll read some of the purport. Dhruva Maharaj was cognizant of the defective nature of his own devotional service. And what's also going to be interesting, because we'll soon hear how Krishna responds to this, because Dhruva Maharaj, he was worshipping Krishna very, very sincerely, but his motive wasn't pure. Now, how is Krishna going to respond? Is he going to say, you fool, don't you know anything? Now you wanted something material? Okay, now I'm going to give it to you. Okay, you'll see how you like it, I'm going to give it to you. Let's see, or is he going to say, my dear Dhruva, You wanted something material, but I'm not going to give it to you. I'm going to just give you myself. But I wanted a kingdom. but. Well, how is Krishna going to respond to this? We'll find out. But Dhruva Maharaj, he's cognizant. He's aware of the defective nature of his own devotional service. Pure devotional service is without material form and is not covered by mental speculation or fruitive activities. Pure devotional service is therefore called the Haituki, unmotivated. Dhruva Maharaj knew that he had come to worship the Lord in devotional service with a motive to get the kingdom of his father. Such an adulterated devotee can never see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, because it's not pure. He therefore felt very grateful, Dhruva Maharaj felt very grateful for the causeless mercy of the Lord, because he was seeing the Lord face to face. The Lord is so merciful that not only does he fulfill the desires of a devotee who is driven by ignorance and desire for material benefit, but he also gives such a devotee all protection, just as a cow gives milk to a newly born calf. So Krishna, even though we may not be the greatest of devotees, it is not that Krishna only cares for the pure, pure, exalted devotees and neglects those who are not yet on that platform. He cares for all. Very, very interesting. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord gives intelligence to the constantly engaged devotees so that he may gradually approach the Lord without difficulty. A devotee must be very sincere in his devotional service. Then, although there may be many things wrong on the devotee's part, Krishna will guide him and gradually elevate him to the highest position of devotional service. So what's required? Sincerity. And he'll say something else on this point later on. And Prabhupada concludes the purport by saying, Lord Chaitanya therefore taught us not to ask from the Supreme Personality any benediction, such as material wealth, popularity, or a good wife. One should simply pray to the Lord to be constantly engaged in his devotional, in his transcendental loving service. One should simply pray to the Lord to be constantly engaged in his transcendental loving service. Dhruva Maharaj, being cognizant of his desire for material benefit, wanted protection from the Lord so that he might not be misled or deviated from the path of devotional service by material desires. Okay. We'll stop here. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Did you, in this, a devotee must be very sincere in his devotional service, then although there may be many things wrong on the devotee's part, with the guidance, can you describe what that very sincere is?
What is sincere?
There are things that are wrong.
You're sincerely trying your best. That's what, I mean, off the top of my head, that's what I... You're trying to the best of your capacity to please Krishna. Just like a little child may be trying to... The mother is cleaning the house and the child wants to help. And so the child picks up a little broom and imitating the mother. And maybe the child, by taking the little broom, and maybe the child is even causing more of a mess. Maybe the mother's made a big pile of dirt that she swept up, and the child, in its attempt to try and help, maybe takes some of that dirt and spreads it around. And how does the mother take that? The mother sees, oh, she's trying to help me, and encourages that. Takes the good from it, the essence from it. So Krishna sees the essence of our sincere desire within that may be covered by so many other desires. He sees the essence, the sincerity there. Was that?
Yes, this is difficult when you see in yourself so many material desires to really kind of feel you're in touch with something sincere in yourself. If you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. But Krishna sees that. The devotee doesn't see that. The devotee sees his own insincerity and therefore he's humble. The devotee sees his own insincerity and therefore he's very humble, and he prays to Krishna to please accept his service even though it is not very pure or sincere. And Krishna, on the other hand, sees it from a different perspective.
What if you're a step away even from that and you're not humble, you're just sort of struggling, or not even struggling, don't even have the will to struggle very hard. You know, sometimes you half want to do it and half don't want to do it almost equally.
So then what do? Do you do it or you don't do it?
Is the sincerity of you? Sincerity
if Krishna wants me to do it, he'll keep the coin.
Seeing you return.
There's a story like that. I can't remember how it went. When there were three religious people from three denominations, and they were talking. I can't remember who it was. Maybe we should turn the microphone off for this one on the tape recorder. And we'll tell it after. But anyway, by the end, one of them says, I won't tell you what denomination he was in. But they were at the priest. It was the priest, a rabbi, you know. and they were talking about how they divide up the donations, right? That come into the church or the temple. So the one says, "Why, you know, I 50% for me and 50% for God." And the other one says, "I divided up, you know, 20% for God and 50% for me." And one says, "I just throw it all up into the air and tell him to take what he wants. I take the rest." That's the biggest joke I've heard. That's really funny. Maybe it was. Anyway, that didn't answer your question, did it? I took off the edge off what you were asking. You were asking, how do you...
What happens when you're so borderline that, you know, it's sort of like touch and go, which is going to win?
I'm not sure what you mean, which is going to win.
You're
talking about Krishna's view, or you...
No, from your own position.
But it's always the spiritual desires that's going to win, because there's no question of becoming materially satisfied. So say if you have material desires and you have spiritual desires, we're like that. So we try to cultivate the spiritual desires, and maybe we're not strong, and then we get frustrated, and I'm not going to do that. I'm going to enjoy the material world. But that's not possible. It's not possible. So either today or tomorrow or this life or the next, what we've gained spiritually, which is still there, we'll win and we'll come back to it. So it's up to us whether we come back to it sooner or later, or we could say in some ways it's up to Krishna, how he deals with us. But we should try our best to make it sooner. I'm not sure if Did you have something else you wanted to say?
No, it's just there's other references also in Bhagavad Gita where Srila Prabhupada puts these two things together. You know, sometimes somebody cannot surrender to their spiritual master, but if they're very sincere, and the two things seem contradictory, like one should be very sincere, even though he may be doing so many things wrong, they seem to be contradictory, and so then it always puzzles me.
We're full of contradictoriness. Everyone, right? We're in the material world within a material body. So Krishna sees the good. He'll tend to see the good. And that's the art of teaching. When there's a spark of goodness in there, that has to be fanned. And you don't worry so much about the badness that's there. It will be burnt when the spark of goodness blazes. So the question is less how to get rid of the badness than how to increase the goodness, how to get the fire blazing. That's not the only point in that that sometimes we do make wrong choices, but Krishna, he takes care of us in that way. Either today or tomorrow. Okay. Why don't we end now? So, do you have any question?
I just wanted to know where a verse that Prabhupada quotes. I wanted to know where that was.
What is it?
What do you know? Alright, it's alright.
Yeah, but you won't find it. So you can find it if you look in folio. If you find the Prabhupada quotes that quite a lot. I have it here. But there's a verse that if you're in devotional service, that merging into Brahman seems like hell, and the whole universe appears blissful. The whole universe appears blissful. Everything is wonderful. If you're purely in devotional service, because you're seeing Krishna everywhere. Uh-huh. And you see Krishna, only Krishna and Krishna's dealings. There's nothing else that you'll see. So if you're seeing Krishna everywhere, then the universe becomes blissful. And there's a third one, I think, also. That merging in Brahman becomes like hell, and the universe appears.
Is it Bhagavatam?
No, neither. It's from, I think, Chaitanya Chandra. No. What? You know where it's from? Who wrote? What did Prabodhananda Vrindavan Mahamrita? Prabodhananda Saraswati. Or Rasa. Yeah, maybe. Anyway, it's
something about Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah.
He wrote a series of verses about Lord Chaitanya, when I can't remember the name, and that comes in.
But Prabhupada quotes it quite a lot, and at times in a more complete form. Although that's the most. There's two of the elements of the verse are most famous. Okay, let's stop though. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Ki jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki jai, Gopal Bhaktivinoda ki jai.